as a matter of insurance, but you can never tell with these nervous types. My days of being a target were over if I had anything to say about it. The gun was a pocket model of a recoilless 50 caliber, neat and deadly. The mechanism worked fine, and the cartridges still held all their deadly power, but there would be some difficulty in shooting the thing after I filed off the end of the firing pin. Finding the camera was no shock, since I have very little faith left in the basic wholesomeness of mankind. That I was his benefactor and financier wasn't enough for Wolf. He was lining up some blackmail, just in case. There was plenty of exposed film, no doubt filled with studies of my unconscious face, before and after. I put all the film, including the unexposed rolls, under the X-ray machine for a nice long treatment, and that settled that. Wolf did a good job in the times when he wasn't moaning about the absence of spirituous beverages or nubile females. Bending and shortening my femurs altered my height and walk. Hands, face, skull, ears, all of these were changed permanently to build a new individual. Skillful use of the correct hormones caused a change in the pigment cells, darkening the natural color of my skin and hair, even altering the hair pattern itself. The last thing done, when Wolf's skill was at its peak, was a delicate touch on my vocal cords that deepened and roughened my speech. When it was all finished, Slippery Jim DeGriz was dead, and Hans Schmidt was born. Not a very inspired name, I admit, but it was just designed to cover the period before I shed Wolf and began my important enterprise. "Very good. Very good indeed," I said, looking into the mirror and watching my fingers press a stranger's face. "God, I could use a drink," Wolf gasped behind me, sitting on his already packed bags. He had been hitting the medical alcohol the last few days, until I had spiked it with my favorite regurgitant, and he was nervously anxious to get back to some heavy drinking. "Give me the balance of the money that's due, and let's get out of here." "Patience, doctor," I murmured, and slipped him a packet of bills. He broke the bank wrapper and began to count them with quick, caressing touches of his fingers. "Waste of time doing that," I told him, but he kept right on. "I've taken the liberty of writing 'stolen' on each bill, with ink that will fluoresce when the bank puts it under the ultraviolet." This stopped the counting all right, and drained him white at the same instant. I ought to warn him about the old ticker. That's the way he would pop off if he didn't watch out.
"What do you mean, stolen?" he choked after a bit.
"Well, they were, you know. All of the money I paid you with was stolen." His face went even whiter, and I was sure he would never reach 50, not with circulation like that. "You shouldn't let it worry you. The other stuff was all in old bills. I've passed a lot of it without any trouble.
But why?" he finally squeezed out.
"Sensible question, doctor. I've sent the same amount, in untampered bills, of course, to your old friend Zena. I felt you owed her that much at least, after all she has done for you. Fair is fair, you know." He glared at me while I tossed all the machines, surgical supplies, and such off the cliff. I was careful not to have my back to him when he was too close. Other than this, all the precautions had already been taken. When I glanced up by chance and saw that a covert smile had replaced the earlier expression, I knew it was time to reveal the rest of my arrangements. "An air cab will be here in a few minutes. We'll leave together. I regret to inform you that there won't be enough time after we arrive in Freiberbad for you to seek out Zena and thrash her as planned and get the money back." His guilty start proved that he was really an amateur at this sort of thing. I continued, hoping he would be grateful for this complete revelation of how to do things in an efficient criminal manner. "I've timed everything rather carefully from here on in. Today is a bit unusual in that there are two starships leaving the port within minutes of each other. I've booked a ticket on one for myself. Here is your ticket on the other. I've paid in advance for it, though I don't expect you to thank me." He took the ticket with all the spirited interest of an old maid picking up a dead snake. "The need for speed, if you will pardon the rhyme, is urgent. A few minutes after your ship leaves, an envelope will be delivered to the police describing your part in this operation.
dear Dr. Wolf digested all this as we waited for the copter to arrive, and from his sickening expression I saw he could find no flaws in the arrangements. During the entire flight, he huddled away from me in his chair and never said a word. Without a bon voyage or even a curse, he made for his ship upon our arrival, and I watched him board it. I, of course, merely went in the direction of mine and turned off before entering it. I had as much intention of leaving Freiburg as I had of informing the police that an illegal operation had taken place. The last thing I wanted was attention. Both little lies had merely been devices to make sure that the alcoholic doctor went away and stayed away before he began his solitary journey to cirrhosis. There was no reason for me to leave, in fact, every reason for me to stay. Angelina was still on this planet, and I wanted no interference while I tracked her down. Perhaps it was presumptuous of me to be so positive, yet I felt I knew Angelina very well by this time. Our crooked little minds rotated in many of the same cycles of dishonesty. Up to a certain point, I felt I could predict her reactions with firm logic. Firstly, she would be very happy about my bloody destruction. She got the same big bang out of corpses that most girls get from new clothes. Thinking me dead would make following her that much easier. I knew she would take normal precautions against the police and other agents of the Corps, but they wouldn't know she was on Freiburg. There was nothing to connect my death with her presence. Therefore, she didn't have to run again, but could stay on this planet under a new cover and changed personality. That she would want to stay here, I had very little doubt. Freiburg was a planet that seemed designed for illegal operation. In my years of knocking around the known universe, I had never before come up against a piece of fruit so ripe for plucking. A heady mixture of the old and the new. In the old, caste-ridden, feudalistic Freiburg, a stranger would have been instantly recognized and watched. On the modern League planets, computers, mechanization, robots, and an ever-vigilant police force left very little room for illegal operations. It was only when these two different cultures are mixed and merged that imaginative operations became really possible. This planet was peaceful enough. You had to give the League Society's experts credit for that much. Before they brought in the first antibiotic pill or punch card computer, they saw to it that law and order were firmly instituted. Nevertheless, the opportunities were still there if you knew where to look. Angelina knew where to look, and so did I. Except, after weeks of futile investigation, I finally faced the brutal fact that we were both looking for different things. I can't deny the time was spent pleasantly, since I uncovered countless opportunities for fine jobs and lucrative capers. If it hadn't been for the pressure of finding Angelina, I do believe I could have had the time of my life in this crook's paradise. This pleasure was denied me because the pressure to catch up with Angelina nagged at me constantly, like an aching tooth. Finding intuition wanting, I tried mechanical means. Hiring the best computer available, I fed entire libraries into its memory circuits and set it countless problems. In the course of this kilowatt-consuming business, I became an expert on the economy of Freiburg. But in the end, I was no closer to finding Angelina than I had been when I started. She had a driving urge for power and control, but I had no idea in what way it would find its outlet. There were many economic solutions I turned up for grabbing the reins of Freiburg society, but investigation showed that she was involved in none of these. The king, Wilhelm IX, seemed the obvious pressure point for actual physical control of the planet. A complete investigation of Vil, his family, and close royal relatives turned up some juicy scandal, but no Angelina. I was stopped dead. While drowning my sorrows in a bottle of distilled spirits, the solution to this dilemma finally struck me. Admittedly, I was sodden with drink at the time, yet the paralysis of my neural axons was undoubtedly the source of the idea. Any man that says he thinks better drunk than sober is a fool. But this was a different case altogether. I was feeling, not thinking, and my anger at her escape cracked the lid off my more civilized impulses. I choked a pillow to death, imagining it was her neck, and finally shouted, "Crazy, crazy! That's her trouble! All the way around the bend and dotty as polka dots!" When I fell onto the bed, everything swooped around and around in sickening circles, and I mumbled, "Just plain crazy." I would have to be crazy myself to figure out which way she will jump next. With this, my eyes closed and I fell asleep, while the words swam down through the alcohol-saturated layers until they reached a deeper level where a spark of rationality still dwelled. When they hit bottom, I was wide awake and sitting up in bed, struck dumb by the ghastly truth. It would require all the conviction I had and a little more to do it. I would have to follow her down the path of insanity if I wanted to find her. Chapter 13. In the cold light of morning, the idea didn't look any more attractive or any less true. I could do it or not do it as I chose. There could be no doubting the wild tinge of insanity that colored Angelina's life. Every one of our contacts had been marked by a ruthless indifference to human life. She killed with coldness or with pleasure, as when she had shot me, but always with total disregard for people. I doubt if even she had any idea of how many murders she had committed in her lifetime. By her standards, I was a rank amateur. I hadn't killed more than... That kind of violence was rarely necessary in my type of operation. Surely no more than... none? Well, well, old chicken-hearted revealed at last. Rough and tough to grizz, the killer who never killed. It was nothing to be ashamed of. Quite the opposite, in fact. I placed a value on human life, the one unchanging value in existence. Angelina valued herself and her desires and nothing else. To follow her down the twisted path of her own making, I would have to place myself in the same mental state that she lived in. This is not as difficult as it sounds, at least in theory. I have had some experience with the psychotomimetic drugs and was well aware of their potency. Centuries of research have produced drugs that can simulate any mental condition in the user. Like to be paranoid for a day? Take a pill. You can go around the bend, friend. It is a matter of record that people have actually tried these concoctions for kicks. But that bored with life I don't want to be. There would have to be a lot stronger reason before I would subject my delicate gray cells to this kind of jarring around. Like finding Angelina, for instance. About the only good thing about these pixelation producers is the accepted fact that the effects are only temporary. When the drug wears off, so do the hallucinations, I hoped. Nowhere in the texts I studied did they mention a devil's brew such as the one I was concocting. It was a laborious task cutting down all of Angelina's fascinating symptoms in the textbooks and trying to fit them to an inclusive psychotic pattern. I even called in some professional help to aid in analyzing her case, not mentioning, of course, to what use I intended to put the information. In the end, I had a bottle of slightly smoky liquid and a taped recording of auto-hypnotic suggestions to play into my ears while the shot was taking effect. All that remained was screwing my courage to the sticking place, as they say in the classics. Not really all that remained. I wanted to take some precautions first. I rented a room in a cheap hotel and left orders not to be disturbed at any time. This was the first time I had ever tried this particular type of nonsense, and since I had no idea of how foggy my memory would be, I left a few notes around to remind me of the job. After a half day of this kind of preparation, I realized I was making excuses. "Well, it's not easy to deliberately go insane," I told my rather pale reflection in the mirror. The reflection agreed, but that didn't stop either of us from rolling up our sleeves and filling large hypodermic needles with murky madness. "Here's looking at you," I said, and slipped the needle gently in the vein and slowly pushed the plunger home. The results were anticlimactic, to say the least. Outside of a ringing in my ears and a twinge of headache that quickly passed, I felt nothing. I knew better than to go out, though. So I read the newspaper for a while, until I felt tired. The whole thing seemed a little foolish and pretty much of a letdown. I went to sleep with the tape player whispering softly in my ears such ego-building epigrams as, "You are better than everyone else, and you know it, and people who don't know it had better watch out." And, "They are all fools, and if you were in charge, things would be different. And why aren't you in charge? It's easy enough." Waking up was uncomfortable because of the pain in my ears where the earphones were still plugged in, my own stupid voice droning away at me. Nothing had changed, and the whole futile experiment was a waste, and waste makes me angry. The earphones broke in my hands, and I felt better. Felt much better still when I had stamped the tape player into a tangle of rubble. My face rasped when I ran my hand over it. I had been days without a shave. Rubbing in the dip cream, I looked into the mirror over the sink, and an odd fact struck me for the first time. This new face fitted me a lot better than the old one. A fault of birth or the ugliness of my parents, whom I hated deeply, the only right thing they ever did was to produce me, had given me a face that didn't fit my personality. The new one was better, handsomer for one thing, and a lot stronger. I should have thanked that fumble-finger Quack Wolf for producing a masterpiece. I should have thanked him with a bullet. That would guarantee that no one would ever be able to trace me through him. It must have been a warm day, and I was suffering a fever when I let him get safely away like that. On the table was a piece of paper with a single word written on it. My own handwriting, though I can't imagine why the hell I left it there. Angelina, it said. Angelina. How I would love to get that tender white throat between my hands and squeeze until your eyeballs popped. Ha! I had to laugh at the thought. Made a funny picture indeed. Yet I shouldn't be so flippant about it. Angelina was important. I was going to find her, and nothing was going to stop me. She had made a fool of me and had tried to kill me. If anyone deserved to die, it was her. It was an awful waste in some ways, yet it had to be done. I shredded the note into fine pieces. All at once the room was very oppressing, and I wanted out. What made me doubly angry was the fact that the key was missing. I remember taking it out, but had no idea where I had put it. The slob at the desk was slow at answering, and I was tempted to tell him just what I thought of the service, but I refrained. There is only one permanent cure for these types. The spare key rattled into the basket of the pneumo, and I let myself out. I needed some food, and I needed some drink, and most of all, I needed a quiet place for some thought. A nearby spot provided all three, after I had chased the hookers away. They were all dogs, and Angelina just playing a role had been better than this entire crowd lumped together. Angelina. She was on my mind tonight with a vengeance. The drinks warmed my gut, and Angelina warmed my memory. To think that I had actually once considered turning her in, or possibly killing her. What a waste. The only intelligent woman I had ever run across. And all woman. I'll never forget the way she walked in that dress. Once she had been tamed a bit, what a team we could make. This thought was so mentally aphrodisiac that my skin burned, and I drained my glass at a single swallow. Something had to be done. I had to find her. She would never have left a ripe plum of a planet like this one. A girl with her ambition could go right to the top here. Nothing could stop her. And that's, of course, where she would be, eventually, if not now. She must spend her life feeling damned because she was a woman, knowing she was better than the rest of the crubs around, then proving it to herself and them over and over again. My arrival would be the biggest favor Angelina could have. I didn't have to prove myself better than the Hicks on this rubified planet. Just one look did that. When Angelina hooked up with me, she could stop fighting, relax, and take orders. The contest would be over for all time. While I sat there, something was nagging at me. Some vital fact I had to remember, yet couldn't. For a second, I fumbled with the memory before I realized what it was. The injection would be wearing off soon. I had to get back to the room, quickly. There had been some fear about the danger of this business, but I realized now that was just my earlier cowardice. This stuff was no more dangerous than aspirin, and at the same time it was the galaxy's greatest pickup. New worlds of possibilities were opening up to me. My mind was clearer and my thoughts more logical. I wasn't going back to the old muddled head stuff. At the bar, I paid the bartender, my fingers tapping impatiently while he softly made change for me. "A wise guy?" I asked, loud enough for everyone in the joint to hear. "A customer is in a hurry, so that's your chance to shortchange him? This is 2 gulden short." I held the money out in my palm, and when he bent to count it, I came up quick with the hand and let him have the whole thing right in the face, bills, coins, thumb, and fingers. At the same time, I told him, in a low voice so no one else could hear, just what I thought of him. Freiber slang is rich in insult, and I used the best on him. I could have done more, but I was in a hurry to get back to the hotel room, and teaching him a lesson would take time. When I turned to go, I kept an eye behind me in a mirror across the room, and it's a good thing I did. He pulled a length of pipe out from under the bar and raised it over my head. Of course I stood still to give him a nice target and not throw off his aim, only stepping aside as the arm came down, just moving enough to let the pipe skin by me. It was no trick at all to grab the arm, keep it going down, and break the bone across the edge of the bar. The screams were heartwarming, to say the least, and I only wish I had the time to stay and really give him something to scream about. There was just no time left. "You saw him viciously attack me," I told the stunned customers as I headed for the door. Rough and Tough had slumped down and was moaning out of sight somewhere behind the bar. "I'm going to call the police now. See that he doesn't leave." Of course, he had as much intention of leaving as I had of calling the law. I was out the door long before any of them had made their minds up as to just what was going on. Of course, I couldn't run and draw any attention to myself. Getting back to the hotel at a fast walk was the best I could do, but I was sweating all over from the tension. Inside the room, the first thing I saw was the container on the table with the needle wrapped in cloth beside it. My hands didn't shake, but they would have if I had let them. This was a very close thing. Collapsed in a chair afterwards, I held up the jar and saw that there was less than a milliliter of juice left. The very next thing on the agenda was the necessity of laying in a supply of the stuff. I could remember the formula clearly and would have no trouble rebuilding it. Of course, there would be no drug suppliers open at this time of night, but that made things a lot easier. There is a law of history that says weapons were invented before money. In my suitcase was a recoilless 75 caliber that could get me more of the galaxy's goods than all of the money in existence. That was my mistake. Some nagging worry gnawed me then, but I ignored it. The tension and then the relief after getting the shot had me all loosened up. On top of that was the need to hurry. The limited time I had to find what I needed and get it back to the hotel room. My thoughts were on the job and how best to do it as I unlocked the suitcase and reached for my gun lying right there on top of the clothes. At this point, the thin voice in my memory was screaming inaudibly to me. But this only made me reach faster for the gun. Something was badly wrong, and this was the thing that would fix it. As I grabbed the butt, the memory broke through. Just a little bit too slow. Dropping the gun, I dived for the door, too late by far. Behind me, I heard a pop as the sleep gas grenade I had put under the gun let go. Even as I fell forward into darkness, I wondered how I could ever have possibly done such a stupid thing as that. Chapter 14. Coming out of the gas, my first feeling was one of regret. It is a truism that the workings of the mind are a source of constant astonishment. The effects of my devil's brew had worn off. There was nothing wrong with my memory, now that the post-hypnotic blocks I had put on it had been removed. All too vividly, I could recall the details of my interlude of madness. Though I sickened at the things I had thought and done, I simultaneously felt a twinge of regret that could not be abolished. There had been terrible freedom in standing so alone that even the lives of other men meant less than nothing. Undoubtedly a warped sensation, but still a tremendously attractive one. Like taking drugs. Even while detesting the thought, I felt the desire for more of the same. In spite of my 12 hours of forced sleep, I was exhausted. It took all of my energy to drag over to the bed and collapse on it. Foresight had provided a bottle of stimulating spirits, and I poured a glassful. Sipping at this, I tried to put my mental house in order. Not a very easy task. I have read many times about the cesspool of dark desires that lies in our subconscious minds, but this was the first time I had ever had mine stirred up. It was quite revealing to examine some of the things that had floated to the surface. My attitude towards Angelina needed a good looking at. The most important fact I had to face was the strong attraction I felt for her. Love? Put any name to it you want. I suppose love will do as well as any, though this was no throbbing adolescent passion. I wasn't blind to her faults. In fact, I rather detested them now that I knew her murderously amoral existence had an echo in my own mind. But logic and convictions have very little to do with emotions. Hating this side of her didn't remove the attraction of a personality so similar to my own. I echoed my psychotic self's attitude. What a team we might have made! This was, of course, impossible, but that didn't stop me from wanting it. Love and hate are reputed to be very close, and in my case they were certainly rubbing shoulders. And the whole confused business wasn't helped in the slightest by the fact that Angelina was so damnably attractive. I took a long drag at my drink. Finding her should be easy now. The carelessness with which I took this for granted was a little shocking. I had gained no new information while mentally aberrant, just a great chunk of insight into the tortured grooves that my Angelina's mind trundled along. There could be no doubt that raw power was what she desired. This couldn't be obtained through influencing the king. I saw this now. Violence was the way. A power putsch. Perhaps assassination. Certainly revolution and turmoil of some kind. This had been the pattern in the bad old days on Freiber when sovereignty had been the prize of battle. Any of the nobility could be crowned, and whenever the old king's grip weakened, it was a cue for a power struggle that would produce the new monarch. Of course, that sort of thing had stopped as soon as the societics specialists from the League worked their little tricks. The old days were on the way back, that was clear. Angelina was going to see this world bathed in blood and death to satisfy her own ambition. She was out there now, somewhere, grooming the man for the job. One of the counts, still very important in the semi-feudal economy, was having his ego inflated and guided by a new power behind the throne. This is the pattern Angelina had used before and would be sure to use again. There could be no doubt. Only one small factor was missing. Who was the man? My dive into the depths of self-analysis had left a definitely unwholesome taste in my mouth that no amount of liquor could wash away. What I needed was a little touch of action to tone up my drooping nerve ends and accelerate my sluggish blood. Tracking down Angelina's front man would be just the charge my battery needed. Merely thinking about it helped, and it was with eagerness that I searched the newspaper for the court news column. There was a grand ball just 2 days distant. The perfect cover for this operation. For these 2 days, I was kept busy on the many small tasks that put the polish of perfection on a job like this. Any boob can crash a party, in fact usually does, since that is all one seems to meet at this kind of affair. It takes a unique talent like mine to construct a cover personality that is unshakable. Research supplied me with a homeland, a distant province, poor in everything except a thick dialect that provided the base for most Freiburg jokes. Because of these inherent handicaps, the populace of Misteldross was noted for its pugnacity and general bullheadedness. There were minor nobility there who no one took much notice of, or kept any records about. enabling me to adopt the cover of Grav Bent Diebstahl. The family name meant either bandit or tax gatherer in the local dialect, which gives you an idea of the kind of economy they had had, as well as the source of the family title. A military tailor cut me a dress uniform, and while I was being fitted, I memorized great chunks of the family history to bore people with. I saw where I could be the life of any party. Another thing I did was to send off a thick wad of money to the maimed bartender, who was now working with the handicap of having his arm in a cast. He really had shortchanged me, but his suffering was entirely out of proportion to this minor crime. My anonymous gift was strictly conscience money, and I felt much better after having done it. A moonlight visit to the royal printers supplied an invitation to the party. My uniform fitted like a sausage skin, my boots gleamed enthusiastically, and I was one of the first guests to arrive, since the royal table had a tremendous reputation and work had increased my appetite. I crashed and clattered wonderfully when I bowed to the king. Spurs and sword, they go all the way with the archaic nonsense on Freiber, and looked at him closely while he mumbled something inaudible. His eyes were glassy and unfocused, and I realized there was some truth in the rumor that he always got stoned on his private bottle before coming to one of these affairs. Apparently he hated crowds and parties and much preferred to putter with his bugs. He was an amateur entomologist of no small talents. I passed on to the queen, who was much more receptive. She was 20 years his junior, and attractive in a handsomely inflated bovine way. Rumor also had it that she was bored by his beetles and much preferred Homo sapiens to Lepidoptera. I tested this calumny by giving her hand an extra little squeeze when I held it, and Queenie squeezed back with an expression of great interest. I moved on to the buffet. While I ate, the guests continued to arrive. Watching them as they entered didn't interfere with my demolishing the food or sampling all of the wines. I had finished stoking up by the time the rest were just starting, so I could circulate among them. All of the women were subjected to my very close scrutiny, and most of them enjoyed it, because if I say so myself, with my new face and the fit of the uniform, I cut a mean swath through the local types. I really wasn't expecting to run across Angelina's trail this easily, but there was always the chance. Only a few of the women even remotely resembled her, but it took only a few words each time to settle the fact that they were true blue blue blood and not my little interstellar killer. This task was made simpler by the fact that the Freiber beauties ran heavily towards the flesh, and Angelina was a neat and petite package. I went back to the bar.
"You have been given a royal command," an adenoidal voice said in my ear while fingers plucked at my sleeve. I turned and gave my best scowl to the character who still clutched the fabric. "Let go the suit, or I push your buck-toothed face the punch-bowl in!"
I growled in my thickest Mr. Drossian accent. He let go as if he had grabbed something hot and got all red and excited-looking.
"That's better," I added, cutting off his next words. "Now, who wants to see me? The king?"
"Her Majesty, the Queen," he managed to squeeze out between thin lips.
"That's good. I want to see her, too. Show the way."
I forged a way through the crowd while my new friend clattered behind, trying to pass me. I stopped before I reached the group around Queen Helda, and let him get ahead, all out of breath and sweating.
"Your Majesty, this is the Baron Grav—" "Not Baron," I cut in with my hideously rich accent. "Grav Bent Diebstahl, with a poor provincial family cheated centuries ago of our rightful title by thieving and jealous counts."
I scowled straight at my guide, as if he had been in the plot, and he turned the flush on again.
"I don't recognize all of your honors, Grav Bent," the queen said, in her low voice, that reminded me of pastures on a misty morn. She pointed to my manly chest, to the row of decorations I had purchased from a curio dealer just that morning.
"Galactic medals, Your Majesty, a younger son of the provincial nobility. His family, impoverished by the greedy and corrupt, can find little opportunity to advance himself here on Freiber. That is why I took service off-planet and served for the best years of my youth in the Stellar Guard. These are for commonplace happenings, such as battles, invasions, and space boardings, but this is the one I can really take pride in.
I fingered through the jingling hardware until I came to an unsightly thing, all comets, novas, and sparkling lights.
This is the Stellar Star, the most prized award in the Guards.
I took it in my hand and gave it a long look. In fact, I think it was a Guard decoration, given out for re-enlisting or 5 years of KP or some such.
It's beautiful, the Queen said. Her taste in metals was no better than her taste in clothes, but what can you expect on these backward planets?
It is that, I agreed. I don't enjoy describing the metal's history, but if it is a royal command...
It was, and given very coyly indeed. I lied about my exploits for a while and kept them all interested. There would be plenty of talk about me in the morning, and I hoped some of it would trickle down to Angelina's ears, wherever she was hiding. Thinking of her took the edge off my fun, and I managed to excuse myself and go back to the bar. I spent the rest of the evening talking up the wonders of my imaginary history to everyone I could nail. Most of them seemed to enjoy it, since the court was normally short on laughs. The only one who didn't seem to be getting a charge out of it was myself. Though the plan had seemed good at first, the more I became involved with it, the slower it appeared. I might flutter around the fringe of these fantastically dull court circles for months without finding a lead to Angelina. The process had to be accelerated. There was one idea drifting in and out of my head, but it bordered on madness. If it misfired, I would be either dead or barred from these noble circles forever. This last was a fate I could easily stand, but it wouldn't help me find my lovely quarry. However, if the plan did work, it would shortcut all the other nonsense. I flipped a coin to decide, and of course won, since I had palmed the coin before the toss. It was going to be action. Before coming, I had pocketed a few items that might come in handy during the course of the evening. One of them was a surefire introduction to the king, in case I felt that getting nearer to him might be of some importance. I slipped this into an outer pocket, filled the largest glass I could find with sweet wine, and trundled through the cavernous rooms in search of my prey. If King Wilhelm had been crocked when he arrived, he was now almost paralyzed. He must have had a steel bar sewn into the back of his white uniform jacket, because I swear his own spine shouldn't have held him up. But he was still drinking and swaying back and forth, his head bobbing as though it were loosely attached. He had a crowd of old boys around him, and they must have been swapping off-color stories, because they gave me varying degrees of get-lost looks when I trundled up and snapped to attention. I was bigger than most of them, and must have made a nice blob of color, because I caught Billy's eye, and the head slowly slewed around in my direction. One of his octogenarian cronies had met me earlier in the evening and was forced to make the introduction.
"A very great pleasure to meet your majesty," I droned, with a bit of drunken blur to my voice.
Not that the king noticed, but some of the others did, and scowled.
"I am by way of being a bit of an entomologist myself, if you will pardon the expression, hoping to follow in your royal footsteps. I am keen on this, and feel that greater attention should be paid on Freiber. More respect given, I should say, and more opportunity taken to utilize the advantageous aspects of the Foraminifera, Lepidoptera, and all the others. Heraldry, for instance. The flags might utilize the more visual aspects of insects."
I babbled on like this for a while, the crowd getting impatient with the unwanted interruption. The king, who wasn't getting in more than one word in 10, got tired of nodding after a while, and his attention began to wander. My voice thickened and blurred, and I could see them wondering how to get rid of the drunk. When the first tentative hand reached out for my elbow, I played my trump card.
"Because of your majesty's interest," I said, fumbling in my pocket, "I carefully kept this specimen, carrying it across countless light years to reach its logical resting place, your highness's collection."
Pulling out the flat plastic case, I held it under his nose. With an effort, he blinked his watery eyes back into focus and let out a little gasp. The others crowded around, and I gave them a few seconds to enjoy the thing. Well, it was a beautiful bug, I can't deny that. However, it had not traveled across countless light years, because I had just made it myself that morning. Most of the parts were assembled from other insects, with a few pieces of plastic thrown in where nature had let me down. Its body was as long as my hand, and it had three sets of wings, each set in a different color. There were a lot of legs underneath, pretty mismatched, I'm afraid, since they came from a dozen other insects, and a lot of them got mashed or misplaced during construction. Some other nice touches, like a massive stinger, three eyes, a corkscrew tail, and such like, were not lost on my rapt audience. I had had the foresight to make the case of tinted plastic which blurred the contents nicely, and hinted at rather than revealed them.
"But you must see it more closely, Your Highness," I said,
snapping open the case while both of us swayed back and forth. This was a difficult juggling act, as I had to hold the case in the same hand as my wine glass, leaving my other hand free to grasp the monstrosity. I plucked it out between thumb and forefinger, and the king leaned close, the drink in his own glass slopping back and forth in his eagerness. I squeezed just a bit with my thumb, and the bug popped forward in lively fashion and dived into the king's glass.
"Save it! Save it!" I cried. "A valuable specimen!"
I plunged my fingers in after it and chased it around and around. Some of the drink slopped out, staining Wilhelm's gilt-edged cuff. A gasp went up and angry voices sounded. Someone pulled hard at my shoulder.
"Leave off, you title-stealing clots!"
I shouted, and pulled away roughly from the grasp. The drowned insect flew out of my fingers and landed on the king's chest, from where it fell slowly to the floor, shedding wings, legs, and other parts on the way. I must have used a very inferior glue. When I leaped to grab the dropping corpse, the forgotten drink in my other hand splashed red and sticky onto the king's jacket. A howl of anger went up from the crowd. I'll say this much for the king. He took it well, stood there, swaying like a tree in the storm, but offering no protest outside of mumbling, I say, a few times. Not even when I rubbed the wine in with my handkerchief, treading on his toes by accident as the crowd behind pushed too close. One of them pulled hard at my arm, then let go when I shrugged. My arm struck against Wilhelm the Knight's noble chest, and his royal upper plate popped out on the floor to add to the fun. Fun it was, too, once the old boys got cleared away. The younger nobility leaped to their majesty's defense, and I showed them a thing or two about mix-it-up fighting that I had learned on a number of planets. They made up in energy what they lacked in technique, and we had a really good go-around. Women screamed, strong men cursed, and the king was half carried out of the fracas. After that, things got dirty, and I did too. I couldn't blame them, but that didn't stop me from giving just as good as I received. My last memory is of a number of them holding me while another one hit me. I got him in the face with the shoe on my free leg, but they grabbed that too, and his replacement turned off all the lights. Chapter 15. Uncivilized as my behavior had been, the jailers persisted in treating me in a most civilized fashion. I grumbled about this and made their job as hard as possible. I hadn't voluntarily entered prison in order to win a popularity contest. Pulling all those gags on the poor old king had been a risk. Lèse Majesté is the sort of crime that is usually punishable by death. Happily, the civilizing influences of the League had penetrated darkest fiber, and the locals now fell over backwards to show me how law-abiding they were. I would have none of it. When they brought me a meal, I ate it, then destroyed the dishes to show my contempt for this unlawful detention. This was the bait. The bruises I had suffered would be a small enough price to pay if my attempt at publicity paid off in the right quarters. Without a doubt, I was being discussed. A figure of shame, a traitor to my class, a violent man in a peaceful world, and a pugnacious, combative, uncompromising one at that. In short, I was all the things a good Friberian detested, and the sort of a man Angelina should have a great deal of interest in. In spite of its recent bloody past, Freiber was woefully short of roughneck manpower. Not at the very lowest levels, of course. The portside drinkeries were stuffed with muscle-bound apes with pinhead brains. Angelina would be able to recruit all of those she needed. But strong-arm squads alone wouldn't win her a victory. She needed allies and aid from the nobility. And from what I had seen, this sort of talent was greatly lacking. In my indirect manner, I had displayed all the traits she would be interested in, doing it in such a way that she wouldn't know the show had been arranged only for her. The trap was open. All she had to do was step into it. Metal boomed as the turnkey rapped on the door. "You have visitors, Grav Diebstahl," he said, opening the inner grill. "Tell them to go to hell," I shouted. "There's no one on this poxy planet I want to see." Paying no attention to my request, he bowed in the governor of the prison and a pair of ancient types wearing black clothes and severe looks. I did the best I could to ignore them. They waited grimly until the guard had gone. Then the skinniest opened a folder he was carrying and slowly drew out a sheet of paper with his fingertips. "I will not sign a suicide note so you can butcher me in my sleep," I snarled at him. This rattled him a bit, but he tried to ignore it. "That is an unfair suggestion," he intoned solemnly. "I am the royal attorney and would never condone such an action." All three of them nodded together as though they were pulled by one string, and the effect was so compulsive that I almost nodded myself. "I will not commit suicide voluntarily," I said harshly, to break the spell of agreement. "That is the last word that will be said on the subject." The royal attorney had been around the courts long enough not to be thrown off his mark by this kind of obliquity. He coughed, rattled the paper, and got back to basics. "There are a number of crimes you could be charged with, young man," he droned, with an intensely gloomy expression draped on his face. I yawned, unimpressed. "I hope this will not have to be done," he went on, "since it would only cause harm to all concerned. The king himself does not wish to see this happen, and in fact has pressed upon me his earnest desire to have this affair ended quietly now. His desire for peace has prevailed upon us all, and I am here now to put his wish into action. If you will sign this apology, you will be placed aboard a starship leaving tonight. The matter will be ended." "Trying to get rid of me to cover up your drunken brawls at the palace, hey?" I sneered. The attorney's face purpled, but he controlled his temper with a magnificent effort. If they threw me off the planet now, everything was wasted. "You are being insulting, sir," he snorted. "You are not without blame in this matter, remember. I heartily recommend that you accept the king's leniency in this tragic affair and sign the apology." He handed the paper to me, and I tore it to pieces. "Apologize? Never!" I shouted at them. "I was merely defending my honor against your drunken louts and larcenous nobility, all descended from thieves who stole the titles rightly belonging to my family." They left then, and the prison governor was the only one young and sturdy enough for me to help on the way with the toe of my shoe in the appropriate spot. Everything was as it should be. The door clanged shut behind them, on a rebellious, cantankerous, belligerent son of the Freiber soil. I had arranged things perfectly to bring me to the attention of Angelina. But unless she became interested in me soon, I stood a good chance of spending the rest of my days behind these grim walls. Waiting has always been bad for my nerves. I am a thinker during moments of peace, but a man of action most of the time. It is one thing to prepare a plan and leap boldly into it. It is another thing altogether to sit around a grubby prison cell, wondering if the plan has worked or if there is a weak link in the chain of logic. Should I crack out of this pokey? That shouldn't be hard to do, but it had better be saved for a last resort. Once out, I would have to stay undercover, and there would be no chance of her contacting me. That was why I was gnawing my way through all my fingernails. The next move was up to Angelina. All I could do was wait. I only hoped that she would gather the right conclusions from all the violent evidence I had supplied. After a week, I was stir-crazy. The royal attorney never came back, and there was no talk of a trial or sentencing. I had presented them with an annoying problem, and they must have been scratching their heads feebly over it and hoping I would go away. I almost did. Getting out of this backwoods jail would have been simplicity itself. But I was waiting for a message from my deadly love. I toyed with the possibilities of the things she might do. Perhaps arrange pressure through the court to have me freed? Or smuggle in a file and a note to see if I could break out on my own? This second possibility appealed to me most, and I shredded my bread every time it arrived to see if anything had been baked into it. There was nothing. On the eighth day, Angelina made her play, in the most forthright manner of her own. It was night, but something unaccustomed woke me up. Listening produced no answers, so I slipped over to the barred opening in the door and saw a most attractive sight at the end of the hall. The night guard was sprawled on the floor, and a burly, masked figure, dressed completely in black, stood over him with a kosh in one meaty hand. Another stranger, dressed like the first, came up, and they dragged the guard further along the hall towards me. One of them rummaged in his waist wallet and produced a scrap of red cloth that he put between the guard's limp fingers. Then they turned towards my cell, and I moved back out of sight, climbing noiselessly into bed. A key grated in the lock, and the lights came on. I sat up, blinking, giving a fine imitation of a man waking up.
"Who's there? What do you want?" I asked.
"Up quickly and get dressed, Deepstall. You're getting out of here." This was the first thug I had seen, the blackjack still hanging from his hand. I sagged my jaw a bit, then leaped out of bed with my back to the wall.
"Assassins!" I hissed. "So that's Vile King Billy's bright idea, is it? Going to put a rope around my neck and swear I hung myself? Well, come on, but don't think it will be easy."
"Don't be an idiot," the man whispered, "and shut the big mouth. We're here to get you out. We're friends." Two more men, dressed the same way, pushed in behind him, and I had a glimpse of a fourth one in the hall.
"Friends," I shouted. "Murderers is more like it. You'll pay dearly for this crime."
The fourth man, still in the hall, whispered something, and they charged me. I wanted a better glimpse of the boss. He was a small man, if he was a man. His clothes were loose and bulky, and there was a stocking mask over his entire head. Angelina would be just about that tall. But before I could get a better look, the thugs were on me. I kicked one in the stomach and ducked away. This was fighting barroom style, and they had all the advantages. Without shoes or a weapon, I didn't stand a chance, and they weren't afraid to use their koshes. I tried hard not to smile with victory as they worked me over. Only reluctantly did I allow myself to be dragged to the place where I wanted to go. Chapter 16. Because the pounding on the head had only made me groggy, one of them broke a sleep capsule under my nose, and that was that for a while. So, of course, I had no idea of how far we had traveled, or where on Freiber I was. They must have given me the antidote, because the next thing I saw was a scrawny type with a hypodermic injector in his hand. He was peeling back my eyelid to look, and I slapped his hand away.
"Going to torture me before you kill me, swine," I said, remembering the role I had to play.
"Don't worry about that," a deep voice said behind me. "You are among friends, people who can understand your irritation with the present regime."
This voice wasn't much like Angelina's. Neither was the burly, sour-faced owner. The medic slid out and left us alone, and I wondered if the plan had slipped up somewhere. Iron Jaw with beady eyes had a familiar look. I recognized him as one of the Friburian nobility. I had memorized the lot, and looking at his ugly face, I dredged up a mnemonic. A midget painted bright red.
"Erdenrunt, the Count of Erdenrunt," I said, trying to remember what else I had read about him. "I might believe you were telling me the truth if you weren't His Highness's first cousin.
I find it hard to consider that you would steal a man from the royal jail for your own purposes. It's not important what you believe, he snapped angrily.
He had a short fuse, and it took him a moment to get his temper back under control.
Vilhelm may be my cousin. That doesn't mean I think he is the perfect ruler for our planet. You talked a lot about your claims to higher rank and the fact that you had been cheated. Did you mean that? Or are you just another parlor windbag? Think well before you answer. You may be committing yourself. There may be other people who feel as you do, that there is change in the wind.
Impulsive, enthusiastic, that was me. Loyal friend and deadly enemy and just solid guts when it came to a fight. Jumping forward, I grabbed his hand and pumped it.
If you are telling me the truth, then you have a man at your side who will go the whole course. If you are lying to me and this is some trick of the king's, well then, Count, be ready to fight.
No need to fight, he said, extracting his hand with some difficulty from my clutch.
Not between us, at least. We have a difficult course ahead of us, and we must learn to rely upon each other.
He cracked his knuckles and looked glumly out the window.
I sincerely hope that I will be able to rely on you. Freiber is a far different world from the one our ancestors ruled. The League has sapped the fight from our people. There are none I can really rely on. There's nothing wrong with the bunch who took me out of my cell. They seem to do the job well enough. Muscle, he spat, and pressed a button on the arm of his chair. Thugs with heads of solid stone. I can hire all of those I need. What I need are men who can lead. Help me to lead Freiber into its rightful future.
I didn't mention the man who led the muscle the previous night, the one who had stayed in the corridor. If Erden Runt wasn't going to talk about Angelina, I certainly couldn't bring up the topic. Since he wanted brain, not brawn, I decided to give him a little.
Did you dream up the torn piece of uniform left in the guard's hand in the prison? That was a good touch.
His eyes narrowed a bit when he turned to look at me.
You are quite observant, Bent, he said. A matter of training, I told him, trying to be both unassuming and positive at the same time. There was this piece of red cloth with a button in the guard's hand, like something he had grabbed in a struggle, yet all of the men I saw were dressed only in black. Perhaps a bit of misdirection. With each passing moment, I'm getting happier that you have joined me, he said, and showed me all of his ragged teeth in an expression he must have thought was a grin.
The old Duke's men wear red livery, as you undoubtedly know.
And the old Duke is the strongest supporter of Vilhelm the Ninth, I finished for him. It wouldn't hurt in the slightest if he had a falling out with the king.
Not the slightest,
Erden Runt echoed, and showed me all of his teeth again. I was beginning to dislike him intensely. If this was the front man Angelina had picked for her operation, then he was undoubtedly the best one for the job on the planet. But he was such a puffed-up crumb with barely enough imagination to appreciate the ideas Angelina was feeding him. Yet I imagine he had the money and the title, and the ambition, which combination she had to have. Once more, I wondered where she was. Something came in through the door, and I recoiled, thinking the war was on. It was only a robot, but it made such a hideous amount of hissing and clanking that I wondered what was wrong with it. The Count ordered the ghastly thing to wheel over the bar. As it turned away, I saw what could only have been a chimney projecting behind one shoulder. There was the distinct odor of coal smoke in the air.
Does that robot burn coal? I gurgled.
It does, the Count said, pouring us out a pair of drinks. It is a perfect example of what is wrong with the Freiburian economy under the gracious rule of Vilhelm the Incompetent. You don't see any robots like this in the capital.
I should hope not, I gasped, staring bug-eyed at the trickle of steam escaping from the thing and the stains of rust and coal dust on its plates. Of course, I've been away a long time. Things change.
They don't change fast enough. And don't act galactic-wise with me, Deedstall.
I've been to Mistledross and seen how the rubes live. You have no robots at all, much less a contraption like this.
He kicked at the thing in sullen anger, and it staggered back a bit, valves clicking open as steam pumped into the leg pistons to straighten it up.
200 years come next Grundlov's Day, we will have been in the League, milked dry and pacified by them, and for what? To provide luxuries for the King and Freiberbad, while out here we get a miserable consignment of a few robot brains and some control circuitry. We have to build the rest of the inefficient monsters ourselves. And out in the real sticks where you come from, they think robot is a misspelling of a boat that goes with oars.
He drained his glass, and I made no attempt to explain to him the economics of galactic commerce, planetary prestige, or the multifold levels of intercommunication. This lost planet had been cut off from the mainstream of galactic culture for maybe 1,000 years, until contact had been re-established after the breakdown. They were being eased back into the culture gradually, without any violent repercussions that might upset the process. Sure, 1 billion robots could be dumped here tomorrow. What good would that do the economy? It was certainly much better to bring in the control units and let the locals build the things for themselves. If they didn't like the final product, they could improve the design instead of complaining. The Count, of course, didn't see it this way. Angelina had done a nice job of playing upon his prejudices and desires. He was still glaring at the robot when he leaned forward and suddenly tapped a dial on the thing's side.
"Look at that!" he shouted. "Down to 80 pounds pressure! Next thing you know, the thing will be falling on its face and burning the place down! Stoke, you idiot! Stoke!"
A couple of relays closed inside the contraption, and the robot clanked and put the tray of glasses down. I took a very long drag on my drink and enjoyed the scene. Trundling over to the fireplace, at a slower pace now, I'll admit, it opened a door in its stomach and flame belched out. Using the coal scoop in the pail, it shoveled in a good portion of anthracite and banged the fire door shut again. Rich black smoke boiled from its chimney. At least it was housebroken and didn't shake out its grate here.
"Outside! Damn it, outside!" the Count shouted, coughing at the same time.
The smoke was a little thick. I poured another drink and decided right then that I was going to like Erdenrunt. I would have liked it a lot better if I could have found Angelina. This whole affair bore every sign of her light touch. Yet she was nowhere in sight. I was shown to a room and met some of the officers on the Count's staff. One of them, Kurt, a youth of noble lineage but no money, showed me around the grounds. The place was a cross between a feudal keep and a small town, with a high wall cutting it off from the city proper. There appeared to be no obvious signs of the Count's plans, outside of the number of armed retainers who lounged about and practiced uninterestedly in the shooting ranges. It all looked too peaceful to be true. Yet I had been brought here. That was no accident. I tried a little delicate questioning, and Kurt was frank with his answers. Like a lot of the far country gentry, he bore a grudge against the central authorities, although he would of course never have gotten round to doing anything about it on his own. Somehow he had been recruited and was ready to go along with the plans, all of which were very vague to him. I doubt if he had ever seen a corpse. That he wasn't telling me the truth about everything was obvious when I caught him in his first lie. We had passed some women and bent a knee, and Kurt had volunteered the advice that they were the wives of two of the other officers.
"And you're married, too?" I asked.
"No, never had the time, I guess. Now I suppose it's too late, at least for a while. When this whole business is over and life is a little more peaceful, there'll be plenty of time to settle down." "All right," I agreed. "What about the Count? Is he married? I've been away so many years that it's hard to keep track of that kind of thing. Wives, children, and such." Without being obvious, I was watching him when I asked this, and he gave a little start.
"Well, yes, you might say. I mean, the Count was married, but there was an accident. He's not married now."
His voice tapered away, and he drew my attention to something else, happy to leave the topic. Now, if there is one thing that always marks Angelina's trail, it is a corpse or two. It took no great amount of inspiration to connect her with the accidental death of the Count's wife. If the death had been natural, Kurt would not have been afraid to talk about it. He didn't mention the topic again, and I made no attempt to pump him. I had my lead. Angelina may not have been in sight, but her spoor was around me on all sides. It was just a matter of time now. As soon as I was able to, I would shake Kurt and hunt up the bully boys who had spirited me out of the jail. Buy them a few drinks to assure them that there were no hard feelings about the beating they had given me. Then pump them adroitly about the man who had led them. Angelina made her move first. One of the coal-burning robots came hissing and clanking around with a message. The Count would like to see me. I slicked my hair, tucked in my shirt, and reported for duty. I was pleased to see that the Count was a steady and solitary daytime drinker. In addition, there was very little tobacco in his cigarette. The sweet smoke filled the room. All this meant he was due for early dissolution, and I would not be numbered among his mourners. None of this showed in my expression or attitude, of course. I was all flashing eye and hell-cracking attention. "Is it action, sir? Is that why you sent for me?" I asked. "Sit down, sit down," he mumbled, waving me towards a chair. "Relax. Want a cigarette?" He pushed the box towards me, and I eyed the thin brown cylinders with distaste. "Not today, sir. I'm laying off smoking for a while. Sharpening up the old eye. Keeping the old trigger finger limber and ready for action." The Count's mind was occupied elsewhere, and I doubt if he heard a word I said. He chewed abstractedly at the inside of his cheek while he looked me up and down. A decision finally struggled up through his half-clotted brain. "What do you know about the Radabrecken family?" he asked, which is about as exotic a question as I have ever had thrown at me. "Absolutely nothing," I answered truthfully. "Should I?" "No. No," he answered vaguely, and went back to chewing his cheek. I was getting high just from breathing the air in the room, and I wondered how he was feeling. "Come with me," he said, pushing over his chair and almost falling on top of it. We plodded through a number of halls deeper into the building until we came to a door no different from the ones we had passed, except this one had a guard in front of it. A rough-looking brawny type with his arms casually crossed. Just casual enough to let his fingers hang over his pistol grip. He didn't budge when we came up. "It's all right," the Duke of Erdenrunt said, with what I swear was a peevish tone. "He is with me." "Gotta search him anyway," the guard said. "Orders." More and more interesting. Who issued orders the Count couldn't change in his own castle? As if I didn't know. And I recognized the guard's voice. He was one of the men who had taken me from my prison cell. He searched me quickly and efficiently, then stepped aside. The Count opened the door, and I followed him in, trying not to tread on his heels. One thing about reality, it is always so much superior to theory. I had every reason to believe that Angelina would be here, yet it was still...